Hello, and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast number 1958. The topic is trainer education, and the title is Exercise Selection to Address Weaknesses, Lower Quads in the Squat. That is an incredibly long title, but I like the specificity in that. You know exactly what you're going to get. And I want to keep this kind of exercise selection to address weaknesses category going because I have a couple topics I want to cover due to some conversations I got into with a recent client and then also some trainers I've been working with who are getting into training people for powerlifting. So I've coached people for powerlifting for a while. I've helped people get elite totals from the first ever meet. They never did one before. We got all the way to an elite total. It helped people get tons of state records, some national records, top, you know, whatever placements. Like, it's been fun. It's been very fun. Got to travel a lot, help a lot of people, do a lot of really cool things, and I really, really, really love it. So one of the things I enjoy about it is the ridiculous, fun, nuancy details that come into play when you're trying to create the quote-unquote perfect program for people. I get addicted to that. The perfect program is what they will follow, meaning you have to make sure the person can actually do it. That is the be-all and all of programming, is they have to be able to do it so that we can actually get some results. But when I think about the perfect program, it comes into mind exercise selection, such as if I notice people have weak lower quadriceps. I'm going to explain how you know that in a second. I want to know what exercises not only target those muscles, but specifically for each individual client, which of those exercises would be best. And there is an enormous world just in that one little topic. So I thought it'd be fun to dive into this. My recent clients asked about this, so I figured I'd go into it so that way they can understand to some degree what the choices I was making in their programming. So I went through, I assessed their weaknesses in squat, bench, and deadlift. I believe they've competed before in powerlifting, and they're really strong. And I noticed that in their squat and deadlift specifically, their lower quads were weak and their upper hamstring connections were weak. And the upper hamstring connection was going to impact them in their conventional deadlift. And it was still impacting stability and stuff in squats. But overwhelmingly, the main issue with squat was the weaker quadriceps down by the knees. So I want to touch on that in today's podcast. And then I'll come back in another podcast and talk about the upper hamstring connections. Now, when we think about the weaknesses, it doesn't necessarily mean the person's weak. It just, we're talking about a muscle being weakest of a group. So somebody can be very, very strong. They can be, you know, squatting 600 plus, deadlifting 600 plus, benching 400 plus. They can be very, very, very strong, and they're still going to have weaknesses. So again, it doesn't mean you're weak. It just means we found a couple muscles that if they were stronger, the whole system would be better. So that's what we want to do. Now, how can we tell in someone's squat if they have weak lower quadriceps? Well, we have to assume, with everything I'm going to tell you in the rest of today's podcast, we have to assume that they're squatting with vertical bar path. So if you're doing this for you or for a client, you want to view the squat directly from the side or as much from the side as you can get. And then you don't have to have one of those fancy apps that draw like a line that follows the bar path. You can simply just use like an editing video thing and make a line on it. I've actually slid a piece of paper in front of the cell phone. When I was filming a client, I'll film on their phone so that way they have the data, the video on their phone that they can look back over. So I'll set up the camera, coach them, talk about them, maybe spot them, and then after they do a lift, I'll slide a piece of paper over the visual of the camera of the video, and I'll line the piece of paper up with where the bar was when they started their squat. And I'm like, can you see then as you squat, we want that bar to follow straight down the piece of paper and straight up. Now, that is actually really challenging for a lot of people. Overwhelmingly, the majority of people do not have a vertical bar path. So the clients that I work with that have already established a vertical bar path, and then we're working on fun nuances past that, they're pretty elite level clients. They already have elite totals, or they're damn near elite totals. They're very strong. They're usually squatting well over 1.5 times their body weight, getting up over 2 times their body weight. They're very, very strong. So most people, they have to address that bar path first. Podcast 1750 is a training podcast titled Correcting Forward Bar Path in Barbell Squats. So if you see you have a forward bar path, still listen to the rest of today's podcast because it will help, but you do have to address that bar path before anything else helps. So you definitely want to get into podcast 1750. We also then have to assume that their squat stance matches their hip structure. Sometimes people will have the fault that I'm going to explain, which is a change in torso angle, simply due to the fact that their stance doesn't match their actual hip structures. So they learn from somebody who told them to stand like ultra wide stance, and that just doesn't work properly for their hip structures. Or you learn from somebody that does an ultra narrow stance, and that does not work for your hip structures. So you want to know if you have the right squat stance. And in a sense, that means you're not jamming your femurs into the outside edge of your hip sockets. That's probably not going to be ideal. Or you're not pinning your legs in together in a very unnatural way. You want to have your femurs kind of centrally located in the hip socket. That's going to be a little more complex on how to figure that out. But that's just something I want you to hear, because it helps you kind of understand is, for most people, I hate making assumptions, but for most people, that's going to be where their feet are at shoulder width, not hip width, shoulder width. And then you're going to be a smidge wider or a smidge narrower from there. There are going to be people who squat much different than that, absolutely. But if I'm going to give you a ballpark of where to start, that would be the ballpark, is have your feet as wide as your shoulders, the shoulder joints, and then start playing around from there what feels comfortable. One of the things we want to work on is, there's a podcast actually that'll help give you some more insight a little bit, is podcast 1868. It's a Q&A podcast titled, Should I Squat with Flat Feet or Heels Elevated? That will tell you whether you should be in flat shoes or Olympic lifting shoes, and it'll also touch a little bit on squat width as well. So that's going to be some good background podcasts to make sure that the rest of today's podcast can actually help you, because nothing we're going to talk about is going to have that great of an effect until you have your bar path corrected and you have your stance in the correct stance for your body type. It doesn't have to be lasered in to like the half inch, but it has to be near. Has to be near to it. So podcast 1750 and podcast 1868. You can always find older podcasts on our website, www.brutalirongym.com. Now, what we want to look at is, let's assume now that we have the bar path corrected, we have the stance correct. What would we see that would then tell us, hey, this person has weak quadriceps? When they're coming out of the bottom of the squat, if their torso angle changes in the sense that their chest starts to point more towards the ground. So we have a certain degree of torso angle as we descend in the squat. And again, let's assume the bar path is straight. So straight bar path. We're going to have a torso angle that's going to be dependent on femur length, ankle mobility, blah, blah, blah. There's going to be a lot of stuff factoring into that. But femur length and ankle mobility are pretty good culprits there, or pretty good areas to consider. So we want a torso angle that as we descend in the squat, we get to what we feel is the, you know, the bottom of our squat, and we start to ascend, and that torso angle doesn't really change. Now, it's going to slightly change as you squat, but what I mean is, as you went down, you should come up. So whatever torso angle or variable of angle that you had on the way down should be mimicked in reverse on the way up. What we would see with weak quadriceps is when you hit the bottom of the squat, as you go to come up, your chest actually angles further towards the ground, which means that the body is unloading the knees. The body is taking weight load away from the knees to allow the shins to become more vertical. That does mean then that it's shifting all the weight into your hips. So good luck to your glutes and lower back. And then let's hope your thoracic spine can hold all that pressure. But what it means is this is typically referred to as your hips are rising first. So somebody would hit the bottom of the squat, they would go to stand up, but their chest points further into the ground, their knees come back towards the vertical line, the bar path, and then their hips actually go further away from the bar path. If we see that, it's an indicator that we have weak quadriceps. If you take that person and you strengthen their quadriceps and you teach them the cue of kind of pushing back into the bar, and the cue for that is we want to push ourselves back into the barbell. You want to push your head and your chest back into the barbell as hard as you're also pushing up. So a squat is not a down and up. It's a down, leaning back into the bar, and then an up, driving back into the bar. So our mechanics are actually at a slightly diagonal force load to counter the bar trying to push us forward. Very weird, because we don't see it visually when we watch ourselves squat. But the mechanical loading that you're feeling is going to feel like that. You squat leaning back into the weight, and then you squat up, like you squat down, leaning back into the weight. You squat up, driving back into the weight. So you want to push back into the bar as hard as you're actually pushing straight up. And that's going to keep your bar path truly vertical. That's going to keep the weight, the center of the gravity of the bar, over the midfoot to heels. And that's going to help you be much more balanced and easier to lock out the joints of the hips and the knees on the ascent, on the way up. So if we see that negative torso angle, we strengthen someone's quadriceps, we teach that push back into the bar cue, boom. I mean, people get crazy strong. Those two things fix an enormous amount of problems. So when you have people do that, I mean, I've had people, like I've had males, females squat well over 2 times their body weight, 3 times their body weight, once we started figuring this out. So they were getting pushed forward on the very bottom, like the bottom one quarter of the ascent, the descent, I'm sorry. So on the bottom one quarter of the descent, the way down, you'll see their bar path is down, straight, and then it juts forward. We have to fix that. And that's going to be positional awareness, learning external rotation. Maybe we have to play with the squat stance. Maybe we have to strengthen the quadriceps some. We're going to fix that. Once we fix that, and we then teach them how to push back into the bar, I have a 132-pound female who's just squatted 325, like a warm-up today. That was actually pretty cool to see. She's done it in a meet before, but it looked crazy easy today. I have a 148-pound male who squats over 500 pounds, 165-pound male who's about to be squatting over 550. A lot of people over the years, I can go through a lot more numbers, but just to give you the context that at those body weight ratios, when you're talking about somebody squatting 2, 2.5, 3 times their body weight, proper bar path and positioning are paramount because the leverages have to be absolutely perfect. There is no way you're going to use brute force to just fight through a bad position when something's 3 times your body weight on your upper back. There is no fight through bad positions. These people have to be technically perfect. Literally technically perfect. How we do that is making sure there are no weak links. So if we see that negative torso angle change, we're going to hammer their quadriceps and really revisit that pushing back into the bar cue. One of my clients, she's a top level country manager for CrossFit, and we're working on rotating her elbows harder down towards the ground as she drives up out of the bottom of the squat to make sure that her shoulders don't roll forward, which commonly happens for people is their body's going to release some of that thoracic positioning to try to keep the hips from having to shift further back from the bar path line. So they're going to essentially curve their upper back to try to keep their hips close. Well, then by body, your upper back, it's going to be freaking annihilated. And you likely are going to stall halfway up or just have a ridiculously painful, miserable upper back, and you're going to get kind of folded over. So for her, she does a great job of pushing back into the bar. And then we also added in the really incredibly hard force of driving her elbows, like she's trying to jam her elbows into the ground, like she wants to point the tip of her elbow directly into the ground as she's coming up in the squats. And when she gets that right, oh, she's smoking some weights. So it's very fun, very exciting to see. So we go through those cues, and it makes people a lot stronger. Now, other than those positional cues, strengthening the quadriceps to just increase overall physical capacity strength is absolutely necessary when you see that fault, that negative torso angle change. So three basic considerations, and there are unfortunately a lot more, way more than I would cover in a single podcast. But three that I'm going to cover in today's podcast are what do we choose to target their quadriceps? It depends on time away from competition, lower back recovery, and whether you want to reduce or include other factors. Now, we're going to visit those in deeper details, but there's also about a million other things you'd think of, and that can be whether you want to address, do they have a stability problem or a strength problem? What equipment do they have available? Are they technically proficient to understand complex movements, or are they not? What's their overall recovery capacity? How well do they eat? How well do they sleep? How well do they manage stress? Their training time. Are you able to extend their training time and have that be okay? Or do you have to minimize their training time when you make substitutions? So there's even more than that, but just to give you the idea that there's a lot that factor into what exercises I choose when I'm looking at somebody's program. But the three that we're going to spend more time into today are time from competition, lower back recovery, and whether we want to include or reduce other factors. Time from competition. If they're really close to their powerlifting meet, well, then we can't substitute barbell squats for something else because they need to dial in their technical proficiency going into the meet. So you have to leave the barbell squat alone. And then in the accessories after squats, you would choose things that are non-squat variations that are movements that involve a very uprighted torso. What you want to do is you want to maintain as upright of a torso during those type of movements as you possibly can, because if the movement, the degree of bend at the joints involved aren't coming from the hips, if it's a lower body movement, then it's coming from the ankles and the knees, and that's exactly what you need. So if we want to work the quads, we got to make those knees bend to crazy fun degrees that don't snap or break, but we got to really make everything be a knee bend movement, not a hip hinge movement. So if I'm working on lower quadriceps, I'm not doing RDLs. I'm not doing stiff leg deadlifts. I'm not doing wide stance, low bar, box squats. You're going to not look for like vertical shin movements. You're going to be looking for things that drive the shins forward. That could be lunge variations. Now, it could be dumbbell lunges. It could be whether you hang hold, front hold, like front rack, goblet hold. You could do barbell lunges, whether that's front loaded, back loaded. There's safety squat bar lunges, transformer bar lunges, duffalo bar lunges, blah, blah, blah bar lunges, whatever bar you can put on the person's back or front of their body. But you would just load them up with a million different variations of lunges. Step-ups. There's a lot of different variations of step-ups. You can also use machines like hack squats. Hack squats are freaking awesome for the knees because they involve pretty much nothing else when they do correctly. So I love hack squats, and I actually have a really good Magnum, old school Magnum hack squat that I think is arguably one of the best hack squats ever. And I've owned like the Nebula hack squat and some other really good ones too. But I really like the Magnum. And then there's like pendulum squats, like Wadger Squat Pro. Arsenal makes like pendulum squats. There's a lot of different types of squats out there, machines. But you would look for something that's an uprighted torso. You want the degree of challenge, like the degree of bend involved, to be coming from the knees and the ankles, not the hips. Now, when we're further away from competitions, we can substitute barbell squats for other variations. So we can do front squats. Front squats are a great way to involve more quadriceps into a squatting mechanics. Now, with front squatting, there's a lot of considerations. Do we want to Do I want to increase the thoracic challenge if I want them to also work on their balance control within their feet? Like, do I want them to work on having to control their center of gravity as well and have it be an equal challenge of managing center of gravity during the descent, which they have to manage via just controlling the pressure in their feet and external rotation of the knees, as well as having the quad focus? If I want that to be an equal challenge, I'm going to pick something like a straight bar. It's in like typical, like maybe a zombie squat. Zombie squat with a straight bar, you will hate me. Every client I've ever made do that right now is going, yep, I hate him. zombie squats, straight bar, freaking horrendous. But if you want to reduce that thoracic challenge, you want to reduce some of that center of gravity control, you can start to do, maybe instead of a zombie, you can have them actually hold the bar, like do a front rack position. You can also use slightly bent bars or cambered bars, like Duffalo bar or an actual camber bar. You can use there's tons of things. But the idea is you would want to reduce the degree of sensitivity to their elbow positioning and their shoulder positioning if you want to reduce their thoracic involvement and or positional balance. If I want to overload the lower body, maybe I want to completely take away as much of the thoracic positioning and lower back as I can, I'm going to use a camber bar because that really overloads the hips. And really, you can't kind of muscle it up with your lower back. So that's very isolative into the lower body. So that would be a great kind of choice. Then you have things like safety squat bar. You can make them do safety squat bar. That's essentially like an ultra high bar squat. That one is a little challenging because it's very taxing on the body in lower back and thoracic stress. So it kind of depends on our second factor is how much lower back recovery capacity do they have given the rest of the program. So the first thing is, time from competition. If they're closer to the meets, you have to substitute the accessory movement, not the main squat. If they're further away from the meet, you can substitute the accessories and or the main squat of the day. The next factor we have is lower back recovery capacity. If you're really pushing their deadlift, so again, if you're closer to a meet and you're trying to peak out the deadlift, you cannot play around with the squats. You cannot do anything that overly involves increased lower back stress because you don't have the capacity for it. So you got to be super duper nice with what you choose. You're looking at like basically dumbbell hang hold walking lunges. There's not going to be, they're doing it correctly. There's not much lower back stress there. Dumbbell hang hold step ups, not much lower back stress there. You're being super, super friendly to lower back. If they're off season or away from a competition, you can actually use this as a chance to address not only the quadricep weakness, but also lower back stability and bracing weakness. So you can do variations that are more aggressive on the lower back. So that kind of depends on where you're at as relative to the meet as well. And then the third thing we said was reducing or including other factors. So like we said, do I want to work on bar path correction, foot balancing position? If I do, then I'm going to increase the sensitivity to the bar positioning. So that's going to be front squats or zombie squats. Do I want to include athleticism? Maybe the person is an athlete. So, okay, I'm going to do a lot more jumping movements. I want to use vertical jumps, like continuous vertical jumps, depth jumps, drop jumps, broad jumps, bounds. Those are all great ways to strengthen the quadriceps, but they have much more of an athletic feel. Now, they're more taxing on the connective tissues and the joints, so I wouldn't be doing that necessarily with a powerlifter who's squatting, you know, 3 times body weight and also deadlifting crazy heavy in the same program. But I do have powerlifters who do jumping drills. That's just when we're off season, I'm working on explosiveness, I'll pick, you know, more connective tissue friendly movements, and or I will have dropped down their deadlift volume or picked an underloaded squat variation. So for example, they can't front squat as much as they would typically back squat. So if I'm going to do a challenging squat variation that I know will be significantly lighter than your typical squat load, then I know I have recovery capacity that I can play with and add to the stress of the accessories by using things as jumps. But if I'm doing an overloaded squat variation, say a Hatfield squat with a safety squat bar with hand assist, they're going to be freaking going nuts on that. They're going to overload themselves. And therefore, I have to pull back the accessories and not do really much stress at all in the accessories. So it depends on the main lift variation, whether I'm picking an overload, underload, or just normal loaded variation will also determine whether I decide to include or exclude other factors into the accessories. So there are kind of, to me, a lot of fun nuances when it comes to specific exercise choices to address specific weaknesses, such as the lower quadriceps being weak in the squat. So when we think about the typical workout format, I'm going to have some kind of movement prep. Podcast 1112 will teach you that. Then we're going to go into the main lift for the day will be a squat. And like if we said, if we're close to a competition, it's going to be a barbell competition squat. If they're further from the competition, then you can substitute that squat out for whatever crazy fun thing you want. Then they're going to go into their accessories. Typically, for the accessories for squats, we're going to pick something that focuses on the lower quads and something that focuses on hip hinging. So if I've substituted the main lift for a quad dominant squat, I'll then still do a lower quad accessory, but it'll be less aggressive. Something like we said, like walking lunges or step ups. But if I kept the barbell squat, like their typical competition squat, as the main lift, then I would be a little more aggressive in the lower quad accessory choice. However, again, that does depend on whether I'm close to a competition. So for example, if they're really close to a competition, I'm not going to have them back squat and do all the volume they should have to prep their CNS for the competition for back squat, and then tell them to do a bunch of sets of front squats. Good God, they're going to die. And all of a sudden their deadlift is going to go to shit because they're going to have no thoracic stability. They're going to have no lower back and glute strength. And you'll notice that their deadlift starts to tank within a few weeks. So that tells you that you've overloaded the accessory in the squat day. So tracking the lifts, making sure you're not overstressing in the accessories, make sure the main lifts are always still progressing, is very important on choosing which exercise to pair with that accessory movement. So again, the three considerations we talked about are time from competition, lower back recovery, and whether we want to reduce or include other factors along with the quadriceps being focused in the movement. But as I said, there are other things. Do we have stability problems? If they have a stability problem, meaning their knees are like caving in, you're not going to be worried as much as, well, you're going to be worried about strength, but you're also going to include stability issues. So instead of zombie squats, maybe I'll have them do zombie alternating reverse lunges. Again, some of my clients are going, oh yeah, that jackass did that to me. So that's a horrible exercise, absolutely horrible exercise. But it's fantastic for not only quad strength, but quad stability, like knee stability. And that's essentially coming from the hips. But if you want to include that stability factor, you would factor that into the type of exercise that you would choose to where you're actually focusing on strength, but also including a stability component. Also, equipment available. Do they have a safety squat available? Do they have a camber bar? You know, do they have machines? What do they have available to them? And making sure that your program actually matches what they have. Their technical skill. I'm not going to ask them to do some crazy, highly technical crazy thing if they don't have the kind of awareness or proprioception body coordination in order to do those type of things. I want them to feel successful. I want them to get a good stimulus. I don't want them to have to spend, you know, 8 weeks trying to learn some technical skill when we're just throwing away 8 weeks of possible progress. Well, also overall recovery capacity. If they're inconsistent with their food, their sleep is kind of a mess, and they're a hot mess when it comes to stress, I will have to choose less aggressive and therefore less progressive movements, but I need them to progress, not beat the crap out of them and have them quit or burned out or get injured. So if they're not eating properly, I cannot program them to the max capacity of what their body can actually do because they're not giving it max recovery capacity. They're not giving it the maximum fuel. They're not giving it the maximum of what they can give. So therefore, the program can't be trained to the max. So you have to factor in their food, their sleep, and their stress management. We also look at training time. So for example, if somebody has a very limited time, you don't want to set up some crazy thing that they have to get out specialty bars and bands and all this extra equipment for. You want to make it streamlined, something fast, something quick, something proficient. You could also, if you choose to, when they're further away from meets, you could choose to have the main lift and the low quad focused accessory just be the same thing. So that will shorten the workout up a little bit, give them back a little bit of time, especially if you're making them learn some kind of new weird squat variation. So that way they have more time to watch videos, practice technique, and just not feel so rushed during the workout. So those are some components that we would consider when trying to choose the best exercise for the individual or ourselves if we want to focus on quad strength specific to our squats. So again, if you notice a negative torso change coming up out of the bottom of the squat, we want to make sure our bar path was straight and vertical on the descent. So again, that's podcast 1750. We want to make sure our stance width is correct. That was podcast 1868. And then we would make sure that we focused on more lower quad specific movements, whether that's substituting the main lift squat variation or including that into the accessories. And again, that will be typically squatting or lower body movements that have a more uprighted torso position as compared to a hip hinging style movement. You want to let the shins move. You got to let them move. If something is an exercise that keeps the shins vertical, it's probably not working the quadriceps very well. You could name, you know, sissy squats. You know, that's for the quadriceps, but your shins are vertical. Yeah. But it's very unlikely you're going to build, you know, 3x body weight squat off sissy squats. I know that there are people that would, you know, well, you never know, blah, 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 blah. But in general, 99.9% of the time, you're going to want to choose something that has the shins being angled forwards during the movement, so that way you're getting a stretch and a loading capacity challenge into the knee joint, and that's going to target those lower quadriceps. Okay, so I love this kind of stuff. I feel like maybe this might be like too super nuancey, and people might not like this kind of stuff in a podcast because it can get a little mind-numbing. This stuff rejuvenates me. Like, I'm fired up now. But if you like this kind of stuff, let me know, and I'll make more podcasts like this. If you hate this, please let me know that, so that way I don't keep making these and you hate them. But I do often wonder how advanced to get into these podcasts, and I'm assuming that the proper amount would be sometimes getting advanced, sometimes intermediate, and sometimes beginner. I probably err too much on the side of the beginner because I feel like a lot of people are just messing up beginner things. But I would love to get into the advanced stuff more if people are interested. Let me know. You can always shoot me a message on our website, www.brittleirongym.com. You can go there for all of our services, a bunch of free information we have, free programming, a whole bunch of stuff for nutrition, free videos, tons of stuff on the website. And then you can always shoot me a message from the website on the bottom of the homepage. Again, it's www.brittleirongym.com. Okay, if you like the podcast, please share the podcast. This would be a great one to share if you think, like, holy crap, this covered a lot of really weird, nuancy, fun stuff that I don't hear a lot that I think a lot of people would love to hear. Please share this one. Let people know that, like, some fun details are in here. But I do appreciate anybody sharing the podcast, whether you share it via word of mouth or social media. But if you do share it, I appreciate it because I believe that if somebody is new to the podcast, they can find benefit in their life from the podcast. So I would hope that they can find the podcast to get that help. So thank you for sharing the podcast if you do. If you like the podcast, please consider donating to support the podcast, which you can do on our website. Also, if you like the information we share in the podcast, you can find more from us on our social media channels. You can find us and follow us on Instagram and YouTube under the name Brittle Iron Gym. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.